take a network break. I'm Drew Conry Murray.
I'm Jonna Johnson.
Help yourself to a virtual donut as we dash through this week's tech news. Jonna, what's on the menu?
So today we're going to be talking about some red alert security vulnerabilities, Palo Alto advances in quantum random number generation, Stargate's AI, and more.
And stick around after the news. We're going to have a sponsored Tech Bytes conversation with Fortinet about CNAPP, or Cloud Native Application Protection Platform of the company's Lacework. FortiCNAPP is an integrated suite of tools for cloud native apps. It aims to help organizations manage cloud app risks and identify and respond to threats. We're going to talk about key capabilities and how you can unify security across your cloud and on-prem operations. John, let's dive right into red alerts. What's the first one on our list?
Well, actually, I would highlight this by saying it's a good week for listeners to review the CVE database themselves, because there are a lot of red alerts out there. Out of 1,175 CVEs filed in the preceding week, 57 scored 9.5 or higher, and 7 scored a perfect 10. And 200 have yet to be scored. So probably a good idea to take a look. But some that we'd like to highlight include a pair of 9.8s published by the Android folks. That's Google and or the Open Handset Alliance. That's CVE 2024-49747 and 2024-49748. They detail, quote unquote, possible out-of-bounds write errors due, respectively, to bad logic in the code and a heap buffer overflow. Either one can result in remote code execution without user interaction and with no additional execution privileges needed. IT teams should be watching for the fixes for these two and making sure their users patch their Androids ASAP. So have a look at those two. Drew, I think you had a couple more too.
Yeah, Cisco patched a critical vulnerability in its meeting management software. It could let a remote authenticated user escalate to admin privileges. It's got a CVSS score of 9.9. If you're not familiar with meeting management, it's the management software for Cisco Meeting Server, which is an on-prem video conferencing product. Cisco says the software update is available. It fixes the vulnerability. There are no other workarounds. So if you're on that platform, you're going to want to check it out.
Okay. And then just to follow up on last week's story, there was the zero-day vulnerability CVE 2024-55591, which affected tens of thousands of Fortinet security appliances worldwide. The Shadow Server Foundation reports that nearly 48,500 effective devices are still out there unpatched, despite the flurry of news stories last week, including ours, and despite alerts from Fortinet directly. Shadow Server began tracking a couple days after the public announcements and Fortinet's alert, and has seen only about 3,500 of the original 52,000 affected devices patched and protected. That's really bad, folks. So if you are using the Fortinet security appliances, please, please, please stop listening right now and go patch. Fortinet has confirmed that this flaw is being actively exploited. So go patch it now.
I think this is the only time we would advise you to stop listening, and that's if there is a critical vulnerability that you have to take care of. Fortinet's not the only security vendor dealing with problems. SonicWall's warning of a serious vulnerability in its Secure Mobile Access 1000 gateway appliance that lets employees remotely access corporate resources. There is a bug in the appliance management console and the central management console of the SMA 1000. It's listed as 2025-23006. It has a severity score of 9.8. The vulnerability could let a remote, unauthenticated attacker execute arbitrary OS commands. There are reports of active exploits in the wild, so SonicWall's urging customers to deploy the patch. There's also a workaround available if you need to buy some time to roll out that software upgrade. Links are in the show notes that provide the details.
Okay, so moving away from the red alerts, hopefully you have addressed all of those. So in the news today, Palo Alto Networks releases an open API framework for, get this, quantum random number generators, QRNG. Now, what are QRNGs? Well, these are random number generators that use principles from quantum mechanics to generate truly random numbers, which can then be used to create more secure cryptographic keys. And let me take a step back on all of this. You may be wondering why we need better random number generators, because all the random number generators that exist today on classical computers are random in one sense only, which is that the distribution, the probability distribution, is 100% random. But the numbers themselves always are the same. So if you follow the sequence, if it's randomly generating, you know, 3, 2, 57, 8,952, it's always going to be the same sequence in the same order in the same sequence. And the challenge of how to inject true randomness, so every time you run it, it's different, has been a tough one for decades. And in fact, what you used to have to do was find some external source to the computers. You'd literally tie it to a humidity measurement or a temperature measurement, so you could inject true randomness from the outside world. The reason this matters is, way back in the day, there was a big flaw in Netscape's browser. And I remember reading about this and thinking, oh my God, they really screwed it up. In the browser, they were actually using one of the random number generators to generate what they thought were random numbers that were not. And it was this wide open hack. And that's the kind of thing that you see all around. So the ability to use quantum characteristics to generate true randomness is actually a huge leap forward in generating truly, truly protective hard encryption. So this is a big deal that Palo Alto Networks has been working on. The OpenAI framework aims to make it easier for app developers and platform owners to access these. It's really quite interesting. And Drew, I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, so it's not that Palo Alto Networks has developed a quantum random number generator. What they're doing is saying, we're opening up this API framework to anybody who wants to use it, so that any device, be it a firewall or some other device that needs access to a quantum random number generator service, can use this API framework to do that. We've got a link to the press release. We also have a link to the GitHub, where there's a README with some interesting information about, you know, how they're also protecting the communication between these devices. So I think Palo Alto Networks is recognizing that folks are going to be looking for stronger encryption capabilities, particularly as quantum computing eventually makes its way into the mainstream. That's going to be able to attack classically generated encryption algorithms. And so they're thinking ahead. So yeah, this is interesting stuff.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that they partnered with six other companies as part of this.
Yes. Yeah, they're all in the quantum encryption and quantum computing spaces to develop the API. So again, it's not Palo Alto Networks saying, we've got a quantum random number generator. They're saying, here's a framework so you can go get them if you need them to insert them into various devices.
Yep, and it's very interesting and kind of praiseworthy. So.
Yeah, well done. I will say, all the companies they're partnering with, Palo Alto Networks, are in the quantum encryption space. And so, of course, everything has to have a Q in it, all the company names, all the product names. And I can see it getting very irritating as we dive more into quantum. But what are you going to do? Marketing's going to market.
Well, yes. And I had to explain to somebody yesterday, you know, somebody asked the question, what is a Q, a CRQC? And I said, well, it's a cryptographically relevant quantum computer, and also really ugly but comfortable shoes.
I didn't know that.
Which I am wearing right now, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Crocs, both forms of Crocs.
Moving on, the AI infrastructure boom is showing no signs of let up. Project Stargate is the latest instantiation. This is a big money pledge by backers, including OpenAI, Oracle, SoftBank, and MGX. It's promising to allocate $500 billion over the next 4 years to build out new data centers, specifically for AI development here in the United States. Other technology partners include Arm, NVIDIA, and Microsoft. NVIDIA in particular is likely to be a big winner if all this money actually materializes. Reuters reports that Oracle has already been at work with data center construction partners such as Crusoe to build an AI data center in Abilene, Texas. I will note that this $500 billion doesn't actually exist yet. It's just a number being tossed around. Axios reports that the initial tranche of $100 billion could in part be raised as debt. Jonna, thoughts here?
Well, yeah, I think the big one is, I mean, hey, Drew and I just promised that we're going to give you $500 billion to, I don't know, save puppies. I mean, like, what? Why would you believe any of this other than if the market continues to surge, some of these companies might be able to get their hands on that kind of money. And Drew and I, alas, cannot. But I do think it's relevant to say that, you know, hey, this money doesn't actually exist. It sounds like a press release for the sake of press release. And the bigger issue is one that I think, Drew, you raised, which is, it's great to have the money, but what about power and water availability for, you know, for fueling and cooling this ginormous data center? It doesn't seem like that's a particularly solved problem. And if you talk to the, you know, good folks at Microsoft, we've done many episodes here talking about how Microsoft is looking at investing in all kinds of nuclear power in order to enable AI data centers. So kind of like money without a promise of money without a strategy sounds good.
Yeah, I will say, you know, all of this is connected to OpenAI, and the CEO, Sam Altman, has a history of making extravagant claims and promises and throwing around big numbers, because it, I think, gets some attention and to some folks maybe makes him look like a visionary. I think there is a lot of that here. Of course, there is huge interest in AI and the development of AI, and it's considered you know, not just for technical reasons, but also sort of reasons of national security, a strategic initiative to be invested in. So I do think some money is going to turn up, whether it's $500 billion or not, I don't know. And again, as you mentioned, there are also physical considerations that need to be taken into account: space, power, cooling, water, all of that. Those are finite resources that we need to address. And so far, you know, if we wanted to throw $500 billion at alternative energy sources, that could be a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think even throwing $500 billion at alternative energy would meet the need. And I do appreciate that you pointed out to that, you know, Sam Altman is a showman. This is, you know, this is the kind of stuff he does. Take it with a grain of salt. And by the way, if you know, you want to donate to Drew and Mai's $500 billion fund for indigent puppies, we're happy to take your money. We might get $500.
Yes, but the phone lines are open if you get some money laying around. Yeah, we're raising $500 billion. Moving on, the Wireshark Foundation, they make the Wireshark packet capture and analysis tool. They've announced StratoShark. This is a new open source tool that can capture and analyze system calls on Linux devices. System calls are how user-level programs request services from the kernel. If you capture and analyze these systems calls, StratoShark is meant to help you analyze and troubleshoot like application and device performance issues or investigate security incidents. StratoShark is using the same user interface as Wireshark, as well as the same filtering and dissection engines. So if you are a Wireshark user, you should feel kind of comfortable as you get into StratoShark. StratoShark also shares the same file format as tools like Sysdig and Falco, and Sysdig was involved with the development. And again, the idea is to make it easy to share and analyze captures with multiple tools.
And Drew, if I'm not mistaken, the significance of this really is that it's gotten easier than ever to analyze system calls on Linux devices, right?
Yes, absolutely. And this tool, I mean, there's lots of tools out there to do right. It. It's not the first time this has been done.
But, exactly.
I think it is, you know, a sensible, you know, sort of a way for Wireshark and the Wireshark Foundation to expand its reach. Because in some sense, you know, Wireshark can only do so much once those packets hit a device, it's blind. So this gives you an additional layer of visibility if you're looking to trace, you know, packets from beginning to end right into the device where they went. You can now also look at system calls. I think it is a really nice add-on. It's also nice to see the Wireshark Foundation having some ambition and moving into lateral areas. It's good to see. And just for folks who might not know, for a long time, Wireshark did have sort of vendor money coming to it. It was a sort of a project within certain vendors. That's not the case anymore. Wireshark is now an entirely standalone nonprofit organization. So if you are interested, if you're using Wireshark or interested in StratoShark, check them out, maybe donate some money. You can share some of that $500 billion puppy money we're taking. Share
exactly.
It with the Wireshark Foundation. And there's also SharkFest coming up this year, which is their annual conference for, you know, getting better at Wireshark. So lots to check out.
And where and when is that?
SharkFest US is going to be in Richmond, Virginia, June 14th through 19th. You can go sign up for it right now at wireshark.org.
Okay, cool.
Moving on, Cisco Systems has launched AI Defense. This is a new product that's aiming to help organizations minimize AI risks in two broad ways. And if you just bear with me for a second while I dig through this first, it's aiming to minimize the risks of employees using AI applications by giving you visibility into which AI apps are being used in your org. And it lets organizations apply policies, such as making sure sensitive data isn't being shared with publicly available AI apps. More importantly, I think AI Defense is meant to help companies that are building AI applications make sure that the underlying models are safe. And by safe, I mean, for example, you don't want to roll out a customer chatbot that, if asked, will tell you how to build a bomb or happily give out employee emails and passwords. To minimize these risks, AI Defense can run automated tests against models to make sure they aren't susceptible to things like prompt injection, data leaks, and so on. Cisco says AI Defense can also ensure that guardrails are in place during AI application runtime. I've got more to say, Jonna, but just want to get your initial take here.
Yeah, I think this is a great first step, because AI risk minimization is a huge, huge issue. What I worry about a bit is, I think this product sounds great, but as you know, as we've talked about, it's already baked into Cisco Secure Access, and it's baked into what the rest of Cisco has. So my question would be, if you don't happen to be Cisco, or if you want to use a tool like this beyond your Cisco infrastructure, I would want to ask a lot more questions of how that would go into work, practically speaking, in order to check use of AI completely outside of your infrastructure. You know, basically Cisco can sell you routers and switches and then tell you that they're protected against AI risk, but what about everything else?
Yeah. So I didn't get a briefing on this, so I didn't have an opportunity to ask questions. And the press release and the blogs are kind of high level, as you mentioned. There's not a lot of detail. And as you mentioned, what I wanted to know is how is it delivered? As you mentioned, it's baked into Cisco Secure Access. That's its SSE offering, so cloud delivered security services offering. Cisco saying it can also use other products in its portfolio, like its firewalls or its switches, as enforcement points. But again, no information on quite how that's happening. This product is supposed to become available in March 2025, so maybe we'll get more details on all of those other questions. Many of the capabilities announced come from Cisco's acquisition of a startup called Robust Intelligence. John, I'm with you. I think this raises more questions, frankly, than it answers, but I do think Cisco has identified an area that particularly executives are worried about. And I'll say that's one thing that Cisco is really good at, identifying and capitalizing on trends. They'll sell you the gear so you can participate in those trends, and then also sell you another set of gear to protect you from the unwanted outcomes of those trends. And I'm not saying Cisco's being duplicitous, they're just very good at selling you both sides of that coin.
They are. And in fairness, they are, you know, they're on top of the trend, and that's a good thing. The real question is this the right product from the wrong vendor? Or the right product from the right vendor? And that's really what remains to be seen here. You know, I can't, and it could be the wrong product, but functionally, if it lives up to what it's billed as, it is the right product. That said,
that's the big question.
That's the big if. I did testing for 8 years, so believe me, I know sometimes things don't live up to their billings. But when somebody goes to a lot of effort to describe exactly what something will do, as Cisco managed to do, things like talking about exactly how you can get that visibility, I think they're on the right track. Let me put it that way. Just, is it the wrong company? The right track and the wrong company, that's what remains to be seen.
So one of the links in the show notes, if you're interested, Cisco has, they recently did like a whole AI, you know, day long virtual event. So I watched the video for this announcement, the AI defense announcement. And one of the things they said was their objective here is so that application developers can just go run wild and do whatever they want with the models and go crazy. And then there's a control in place where you can run this AI defense process to make sure bad things aren't going to happen. And I just thought, yeah, right. That's never how it happens. So
lots of questions, but you know, at least it's going in the right direction. And as you said, they're great at capitalizing on trends.
Absolutely.
Moving along to vendors and the general theme of vendors adding AI stuff to their stuff. Network as a service vendor Nile has added an AI tool to better help customers deploy, configure, validate, and manage the Nile service blocks that make up the on-premise infrastructure of the vendor's subscription-based cloud-managed campus networking solution, the Nile Access Service. This new application, Nile Nav, you got to give them credit for alliteration here, can also integrate with Nile's existing AI-based cognitive decision service, which can compare configurations and changes in the environment against a digital twin of the network to spot potential problems and flag them to IT's attention. I think that's why we think this is interesting, because first of all, the network as a service vendor space is getting very interesting over recent years. And the whole concept of being able to integrate with digital twins and things like the services that use digital twins is actually very interesting, because that's one of the questions you want your engineers to be asking, which is, if I do this, what will happen? And right now, the answer to that, or a few years ago, the answer to that was based on how well you knew your network. And a lot of times we got, you know, unintended consequences when we made changes to networks because people didn't realize what was going on. Hopefully this tool will integrate with the existing tool to ensure that chances of that happening decrease even further.
Yeah. And so definitely this announcement sounds buzzword compliant. They've got AI in there. They've got digital twin in there. That's check, check. I'll note that Nile is backed by John Chambers, former CEO of Cisco, so not surprised it's buzzword compliant. I guess my big question, for all of these network as a service things, Nile and there's another out there called Meter, one of their value propositions, this is my understanding, is that they're supposed to take a lot of that, you know, sort of configuration work away and just let you operate your network essentially as a service. So I'm not sure who this AI interface is for.
Well, actually, it's not so much to take the network away. It's more to take away the manually labor-intensive aspects of configuring your network. You still want to be able to set things up, but you want to be able to set things up virtually as opposed to setting things up physically. So as opposed to having software that goes and touches every router when you want to make a change, which is still heavily, you know, it's just automating something that used to be manual, you want to be able to do all those things virtually in the cloud, but you're still going to be setting something up and making changes to it. You want the promise of these network as a service, to put it in other words, is that you have all the power you used to have, all the control you used to have, but with much greater simplicity. And what they're now adding to it, so they claim, is along with that simplicity, the ability to avoid costly and dangerous mistakes. Because if it's super easy to configure something, it's super easy to configure something very badly.
Right. That's true. That's true. All right, links in the show notes. Oh, if you want to find out more. And that does wrap up the news portion of our show. Stay tuned for our sponsored Fortinet conversation. We're going to be talking about its Lacework 40 CNAP offering. That's coming right up. CNAP, or Cloud Native Application Protection Platform, is an integrated suite of tools for cloud native apps that aims to help organizations manage cloud app risks and identify and respond to threats. Today on the Tech Bytes podcast, we talk with sponsor Fortinet about its CNAP offering and how it integrates CNAP for unified security across your cloud and on-prem operations. Our guest is Tony Karam, Product Marketing Director at Fortinet. Tony, welcome to the podcast. And for folks not familiar with CNAP, can you give us the elevator pitch on what it is, what it does?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having us. Happy to be here. So CNAPs, or Cloud Native Application Protection Platforms, are really aimed to simplify and strengthen cloud security by unifying a number of different security capabilities into a single platform. You know, it's a category or a term that was coined by Gartner about 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, it started out with combining what was traditionally known as workload protection or workload protection platforms, looking for vulns in runtime, and security posture management. So looking for misconfigurations within cloud services.
Okay.
So it really started with combining those two sets of capabilities. But again, it's evolved since then, for sure.
So what has it evolved into? What are we getting in a full CNAP portfolio?
Oh, there's a number of capabilities. Today, it includes both of those capabilities. It includes identity security protection around something called cloud infrastructure entitlement management. So managing the permissions or privileges of what are called cloud principal identities within places like AWS and Google Cloud and Azure. It also encompasses code security, a traditional application security capabilities like software composition analysis. So looking for vulnerabilities in third-party and open source code. It includes API security as well. And other things like attack surface management or attack path analysis. So again, I think there are probably no less than 40 or 50 capabilities, of which 10 are defined as critical. Those are the ones that basically defined as being core or critical.
Okay. Tony, Fortinet brought CNAP capability into your portfolio via an acquisition, right? So I believe that's right. So to tell me if I'm correct, and then why? What was the big driver?
Ethan, that's definitely correct. I actually came over. I worked at a company called Lacework. Lacework was acquired by Fortinet around 5 or 6 months ago, and we relaunched our CNAP called Fortinet Lacework 40 CNAP just a few months ago. You know, it allows adding CNAP or Lacework 40 CNAP allows Fortinet to extend its security coverage from what's been traditional network-based protection to a comprehensive platform for cloud-native security, really to help customers address modern cloud architectures that use things like containers and Kubernetes and serverless functions, giving them runtime protection. Again, we talked about security posture management, especially for customers that are cloud-first or cloud-forward across multi and hybrid cloud deployments. You can think about also Fortinet has a portfolio of cloud security solutions. So FortiSASE helps customers secure access to SaaS-based applications, right? So cloud applications. FortiGates help them block malicious traffic to private and public clouds. FortiAppSec helps protect web applications and APIs. And now Lacework 40 CNAP helps them actually secure cloud-native applications from what we call code to cloud. So to the left of boom and to the right of boom, right? For the security practitioners out there.
Boom being an incident.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So this raises the question then, do I really need a separate platform for cloud native environments? Because I can deploy firewalls and IPS in the public cloud, I can run vulnerability scans, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, you can do all those things. Traditional tools though really lack some of the capabilities required for cloud native environments. It's really the scale and the speed at which cloud moves. Cloud's very dynamic, right? Very ephemeral environment. A simple cloud deployment can have hundreds, if not thousands, of cloud infrastructure services, all sort of tethered together, right, to provide some of this advanced capability or functionality that it provides. I mean, there are really some basic, just really differences between, you know, setting up security on-prem and managing on-prem environments versus in the cloud environments. I mean, there is no real perimeter in the cloud, right? We've heard identity is really the new security perimeter in the cloud. And that's true because there really are no physical constraints that you would think of in traditional on-prem worlds like firewalls and routers and other security devices. Also, the rate of change is exponentially greater in cloud than it is on-prem. You know, that just has to do with the nature of the infrastructure, right? Physical hardware needs updates and manual configuration. On-prem and in the cloud, it's really just a bunch of APIs and commands that really don't take much time at all. And then, you know, lastly for folks, you know, there's this difference of who owns security and risk management in the cloud. It's cloud. So managing environments like AWS and Azure and Google Cloud, they all have a shared responsibility model. So cloud service providers are responsible for securing the infrastructure itself or those services themselves. And customers are responsible for ensuring they securely use those services or infrastructure. Also, cloud security is a team sport, very much so. It democratized security, and developers, everything in cloud is code. So developers are playing an increasingly important role.
You said a lot there, Tony. One of the things I want to dive into is ephemerality, the change. So you cited Kubernetes as a possible platform upon which containers are being launched and so on. Okay, right. That environment can change dynamically, containers being stood up and shut back down, quick life cycles. Are we saying that the Fortinet's CNAPP offering is aware of what's going on within a Kubernetes cluster and can dynamically keep policies tweaked to protect what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Ethan, you touch on a great point. And one of the really powerful capabilities within Lacework 40 CNAPP is our ability not to rely on rules. So you can imagine, like you said, a simple Kubernetes environment can generate, I don't know, millions of data points a day, right? If not more. Lacework's platform has been designed for that kind of scale. And we don't need, we have what we call a rules optional approach to security. So we don't rely on rules or predetermined patterns to find, you know, bad things that are happening in an environment. So what we do is every few minutes, we're baselining what normal looks like in that environment. And then we're alerting customers when we see changes to what's normal or when we see deviations from normal, then we're alerting them to what's going on. So that's one of the ways a platform like Lacework 40 CNAPP can scale to the level of these sort of Kubernetes environments.
You also mentioned that cloud security is a team sport. Do you mean that aside from the shared responsibility model between my cloud provider and my own organization, do you mean it's also crossing organizational boundaries internally, like networking, security, DevOps, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely, right? You know, the whole idea these days, well, cloud's been a big sort of enabler for companies to go faster, right? When it comes to building applications and services. So development teams and then DevOps teams, if you want to extend it to DevOps, are again trying to move as fast as possible. They're using tools and technologies to help them do that, automated tools. So things like infrastructure as code, so Terraform or CloudFormation or whatever ARM or whatever your favorite infrastructure as code file type is. Mm-hmm. Organizations are using that. Development teams are using that to really provision and push infrastructure very quickly, cloud infrastructure very quickly. So they need to be able to understand early on whether or not they're configuring those services securely or in line with organizational policies, whether those are regulatory policies, right, to meet some standards, industry standards, or whether they're really security policies or, you know, security policies across their organization. Mm-hmm. So yeah, developers are moving quickly and teams need to be able to collaborate, right? Security teams, SecOps teams, incident responders are finding things in runtime. And what they need to be able to do is have conversations, right, with developers. Hey, you know, we're seeing this EC2 instance act a certain way. Did you intend for it to be able to do these things or not? Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where this idea of a platform that's really a source of truth for different teams, for dev teams, for operation teams, for security teams, be able to collaborate around the same set of data, right? They have the same view if they choose to. So it really helps them streamline issues as they arise.
Is the 40CNAP, when you're talking about the information it can surface, is that sort of slanted toward security operations teams or to a developer? Like how, if I'm coming into the console and looking at information, is it going to make sense to me as a, you know, maybe a traditional SOC analyst or something?
Certainly as a traditional SOC analyst, incident responder, security architect, security engineer, ever think or want developers to have to go to a console like Lacework, CNAP, right? To understand what's going on. So that's why, you know, we're Lacework 40 CNAP is tightly integrated into the workflows and tool chains that development teams use already. So we have native integrations with tools like GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket. So we're constantly scanning code as it lives in repositories, surfacing vulnerabilities, misconfigurations. We're automatically populating pull requests with comments. So that developers have that information, you know, as they're committing code. We're also allowing them to securely develop code even earlier in the process. So we have a number of plugins or integrations with IDEs like VS Code. So as they're writing code, they can find and fix things like vulnerabilities or misconfigurations.
So one of the things I mentioned in the intro is that one of the goals that Fortinet had is to kind of unify sort of on-prem security operations and cloud security operations. Is 40CNAP tying into the broader Fortinet landscape or security operations landscape?
It is. And I think that's really one of the advantages and one of the great benefits of, you know, a company like Fortinet having a CNAP, a leading CNAP in its portfolio of capabilities. You know, look, anytime you ask over the past 5 years, if I asked a CISO or a security practitioner on this, you know, what do they need? What's their biggest challenge? They say visibility. They need more visibility and insight, but sort of to what extent, right? I mean, so that's, of course, necessary. You can't protect what you can't see. But teams, what today teams are begging for and ultimately need is the ability to fix the things tools like 40CNAP finds. Right? It's okay. Help me fix these risks or these threats with inside my environment. Lacework 40CNAP has a unique capability called composite alerts. So think about, you know, all of the different alerts a platform could fire off, from critical alerts all the way down to just low level signals. So we're automatically correlating all of those alerts together into a single high critical, what we call composite alert, which identifies things like the use of compromised credentials within an environment. And, you know, Lacework 40CNAP uses a combination of things like behavioral analytics, anomaly detection, in-house threat intelligence, and even threat feeds from some of the cloud service providers to detect those types of active attacks. One of the benefits is we can detect those attacks. Now, how can teams contain, block, or remediate those? That's where we tie into the Fortinet security fabric. So we've already tied into products like 40SOAR. So it enables teams to streamline the blocking or in remediation of these active runtime threats using FortiSOAR automated playbooks. Certainly, you know, in the future, you could extend that to other risk-related findings like excessive permissions or privileges. So teams can get to least privilege, right? So they can toe the line for least privilege access. Also, you can think about some of the other capabilities in the Fortinet portfolio that are tied to the fabric. So 40DLP, right? So data classification, why is that important? Well, if we're looking at attack posture management or attack path analysis, not only is it good to see which databases are exposed to the internet, but it'd be really great to understand what data is in there and whether that data is sensitive or not. Similarly, with things like FortiCASB and FortiCNAP together, teams can have a holistic view of user behavior within their environment. Of course, FortiGates or next-gen firewalls can be used to block malicious traffic, and then FortiSIM correlating FortiCNAP data for enhanced cloud-native security telemetry. So there's a number of different touch points. Now that we're attached to the fabric, again, it allows teams to streamline security operations, right? It brings that cloud intelligence basically to the fingertips of all these other capabilities and products, which is essential for organizations, right? So they don't have to treat cloud security as some separate thing. It's been integrated now into everything they do.
Okay. Okay. Another thing that's been treated as a separate thing by a lot of shops is DevOps. So I've got a bunch of unique tools and unique processes going on in there. Can I apply FortiCNAP to my DevOps stuff?
Yeah, Ethan, absolutely. Good question. It's one of the newer capabilities within the Lacework FortiCNAP platform. Again, we think everything should be treated the same way. You shouldn't have code security in one group and in one bucket and then cloud security in another. It's just one continuous life cycle, one application life cycle from code to run basically, right? Or from code to cloud. So Lacework FortiCNAP has a number of code security capabilities. We automatically evaluate third-party libraries and open source libraries for known CVEs and vulnerabilities. We're dynamically building SBOM so teams can have good visibility into their software supply chains. We have some pretty interesting SAST or static application security capabilities for interrogating first-party code or code that your developers own and maintain. And then, of course, we talked about infrastructure as code as part of that. The nice thing about a solution like Lacework FortiCNAP is we're not just relying on integrations within pipeline tools like Jenkins or GitHub Actions, because that can disrupt pipelines and folks really don't like that, quite frankly. So we've built FortiCNAP to natively integrate again with GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket. It can automatically discover repos, which is great because security teams are always like, well, I didn't even know those repos existed. Automatically scan them. And then, like we said, provide the relevant feedback for them.
Tony, that wraps up our time, but I feel like I've got a much better understanding of what CNAP is and how it fits into the Fortinet portfolio. But if people want to get even more information, where would you send them?
Sure, Drew, they can go to fortinet.com/products/FortiCNAP. There's a plethora of documents and videos. They can learn all about CNAP in general, and of course, learn about the advantages of Lacework FortiCNAP.
All right, that's fortinet.com/products/FortiCNAP, CNAPP. We will also have that link in the show notes that accompany this podcast. Tony, thank you for being here and joining us for this conversation. And thanks to Fortinet for being a longtime sponsor of Packet Pushers. We do appreciate it. And thanks to you for listening. If you like this episode, you can find it and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. We've got a ton of videos up on YouTube. Just search Packet Pushers for your learning experience there. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, hear us on Spotify. And if you would, leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.